got the message. You got the message, homie.
Not really.
You didn't get the message?
I can't understand that guy.
It's about his vibe.
Okay.
It's about his vibe.
Okay.
It's, I like that. Now, first of all, I use music that is, I can commercially license through Artlist. And I just really like it. I really like the attitude because it's just this like FU kind of mentality that he has. Like, and that's what this is all about.
I guess I'd like to see the lyrics.
I will get them for you. Okay. I will get them for you. So everyone, Happy New Year. This is January 1 recording of 2023, the Closed Network Privacy Podcast episode number 22. And for a while now, I have been hinting that I'm going to try to get my mom on the podcast. And since we've been together through the holidays, and I saw an opportunity while you were at my house to lock you down into the studio, which is just my basement, get you on the show. So, Mima, thanks for coming on the show.
Hey, I'm thrilled.
This is a treat. It's been fun. I've had quite a few people make comments about looking forward to having you on, as you are kind of not a super techie person.
At all.
And have gone through this journey over the last better part of a couple years now and different facets that we'll cover. So yeah, this is going to be a fun episode for me, and I've been looking forward to this. Before we get into it, I want to give a special thank you and shout out to Richard G., the first Patreon on the Patreon channel. This podcast is only supported by myself and the people, the producers who listen to the show. And I also want to give a shout out to everyone in our Matrix chat. I think last time I checked, we're somewhere around 115 people. It's been awesome interacting with everyone and really been enjoying all of the conversations going back and forth on that. Also, we set up a Mastodon server for Closed Network. I haven't actually mentioned this yet, but we've been doing it for like 6 weeks or so. And you can sign up. If you just go to closednetwork.io, there's a link that just says join our Mastodon, and you're welcome to sign up and become part of our community. Mastodon, for those who are not familiar, is a Twitter-like experience, but it's open source software. We're hosting our own server, and we're federated, which means you can follow people on other Mastodon instances, interact with their toots, which is kind of like a tweet, and post stuff. And it might be a lot more... but it might be an easier way to interact with other people in the community within this privacy, you know, security, like-minded space, where an ongoing flow of consciousness kind of chat like is happening in the Matrix chat is kind of hard sometimes to jump in and follow and learn who's who. Though we absolutely would love for you to join that. If it's not your cup of tea and you're more of a social media, like an app on your phone kind of a person, then Mastodon might be the great, you know, way to go. There's some really good Mastodon applications you can download and use to your phone as well. Like I use Tusky, there's Toodle, there's some other good ones out there. But you just go to closednetwork.io, click join our Mastodon. You can sign up an account with your email address and password. You can use an alias email, whatever you want. Join the community. You can post pictures and whatever. It doesn't always have to be just privacy security. I want to see pictures of your cat and your dog and your Raspberry Pi. I want to see it all. So feel free to join over there on the Mastodon. And as always, just a big thank you to our community members and our moderators. And just a huge help keeping things moving along. And so we'll get a little bit more into how you can support the podcast. But I wanted to get into this with you because I also don't want to monopolize all of your time. So Mima. Hey,
yeah.
Happy New Year.
So Happy New Year. I joined your Matrix account probably a year ago and find it very nerdy. As I do a lot of your podcasts, I do enjoy your podcasts, and I try to listen to them. And when they get really nerdy, I just like, you know, because you're my son, I'll suffer through it sometimes. But I know you have an audience that speak nerd, all things nerd, and that's a great place for them.
And we do speak a lot of nerd. And thanks to my nerd buddies, Madison Max and Unintelligent Seven, for helping moderate and be producers and helping moderate those channels. So far, we haven't had very many issues, but they're always answering questions and welcoming people. But we do nerd out quite a bit.
And I've had a Mastodon account for a couple of years. I got through another podcast that offered Mastodon a few years ago.
Right.
I think 5 years ago, actually.
Yeah.
And I read it, mm-hmm. and I use the Tusky. I was using Tootle, but I found Tusky a little easier.
Yeah.
App. And I like reading other people's posts. I'm a little shy to post myself, you know, like I'm not going to say something worthy or something, you know, like I'm so boomer. But I do like that it is a world of social media that is not being fed to me through an algo or whatever, you know, and I can follow the people I want to. And so I will have you show me how to get over on your Mastodon.
My incidents. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's kind of neat because there's always, I know what podcasts you're referring to, and they also have a live chat system, which is similar to Matrix. They use IRC. It's really hard to follow. It seems kind of hard to jump in somewhere. Whereas Mastodon, like Twitter, you can kind of be passive consumer and just read people's content as you want to. And if you're interested in specific people, you can just follow them and you can just like their stuff. Mm-hmm. Even if you don't feel like posting anything, you're right. It's not manipulated by an algorithm. There's no social graph algorithm that's trying to present content to you that it thinks you'd be interested in. You only see what you follow. There's nothing else really going on. There's no advertisements either. And there's no collection and selling of your data. Now, the instance owners, like myself, do have access to logs, like IP addresses and stuff like that. But, you know, that's more just kind of like how the system works. It's not, you know, but there's no selling data or collecting data or anything like that as far as personal information or trying to mine and target someone specifically. So also, Mastodon accounts are portable. You can move your account from one server to another. It's a little challenging, but things are getting easier as it's gaining popularity. So it's really neat to see it grow, especially with all the stuff going on with Elon taking over Twitter and everything.
Right. So all these people, I'll just be me, but all these people jumping ship from Twitter as like a virtual signaling, I can't be a part of that, you know, he's whatever. And I think it's comical, you know,
that
they're like, and then they're like popping up trying to be like, let me show you how to use Mastodon.
Right.
You know, like to other
journalists writing their little how-tos and stuff.
And it's like, dude, you guys are so.
Meanwhile, the Twitter files dumps are coming out exposing what Twitter has actually been doing. Evidence of manipulation, but yet they are so quick to jump ship because I can't be a part of this now that Elon has taken it over. And I'm not a huge Elon fan, and I'm just saying that it's the irony and people jumping ship because they think, oh, now it's bad. Well, it's been bad all along. So, you know,
and I never have posted on Twitter, but I do have Twitter access.
Right.
We'll read stuff. And currently, I'm just following Elon because I think it's funny.
It is funny.
You never know what's going to be said next.
I agree.
And, so part of my rebellion is that when I was growing up, you know, we had Walter Cronkite and people like that on black and white TV. Mm-hmm. And they were like gods. They brought you the news. You know, and I was young and I believed everything they said. And maybe most of what they were saying was not trying to manipulate me, but I was just a kid. I'm watching JFK being shot. I'm watching Vietnam War pieces that I didn't even understand at the time because I didn't know anybody that went to the war, whatever. But there was something that was deep down in me just trusting, you know, that these guys were boots on the ground. So to see these journalists today jump ship when there's something to be exposed and, you know, really investigated.
I don't think any one particular platform should have that much, one single platform should have that much influence on how people get information. So I'm all for a breakup of ways and channels for people to consume information and follow. It also gives you an opportunity to kind of see more with things like Substack and Mastodon that are outside the traditional controlled platforms. And what, I don't care who you are, Twitter is controlled. It's still controlled today, and it has been controlled. Facebook has been controlled. When I say controlled, I mean someone is controlling how and what people see and when. You're not seeing stuff as it happens. You're seeing it as it's being presented to you, and it's curated based upon all these different facets of your and characteristics of your personality and what traits and what leans you have politically or religious-wise and who your friends are and what their leaning political views are and things like that. So it's not unfiltered. It's highly filtered and curated. And I think what you're saying is you had more of an experience where everyone was consuming from the same source and it felt like it was more authentic, genuine. There was probably less, I mean, there still might have been narrative manipulation, you know, coming down from the higher ups. But as far as the presentation of the news and everything, it was very consistent. There was continuity in the seriousness of the matter. And so you felt like it was more impactful versus now anyone really can be a journalist. And that's a good and a bad thing, in my opinion. But I also think that it's better when we can seek out and follow individuals who are reporting. They might have a bias. We all kind of take that into an account, but it allows us to consume information from a multitude of different sources. And I think anywhere where we can do that, where it's not centralized, is always going to benefit all of us. And that's, you know, and I have always been the type of personality, not always, but for my adult period of life, I've been trying to read both sides of the coin or of the situation. There's always like three sides to the story, in my opinion, right? One side, the other side, and the truth somewhere in the middle, because stories are called stories. They're reporting perception from a specific vantage point. They, you know, try as they might, people try to be as honest and, you know, not always in the traditional media, but I think that a lot of journalists are really trying to bring facts to the table. But there's always going to be some editorial aspect of it. And that's what makes it a story to a degree.
Yeah. So something I remember, like, you know, the politicians were separate from the journalists. And so when things would happen politically, they were pushing a story politically, the politicians were. But the journalist was trying to get to the deeper part, to investigate it. And like Watergate, you know. Today, I feel like they're in bed together. There's just no difference, you know, and you're just getting one story. You're not getting two stories to compare to if you're just on the, you know, main media selections or Facebook or Twitter or whatever. And this morning, you showed, you know, I told you, you know, that I was listening to a podcast about the war dogs, and then that went into you showing me this Zimbabwe story on Joe Rogan that, you know, exposed this journalist went deep, right? He filmed 15,000 people mining cobalt
mine. Right.
You know,
in the Congo, yeah.
When on the surface story, we're all supposed to believe that that all of our electronics and iPhones and electric vehicles and everything, there's no bad stuff happening.
There's no artesian miners. It's all done with, you know, traditional industrial equipment.
Yeah.
Right.
So that to me is a journalist story.
Right.
Right. That's what I appreciate in journalism. The stuff you get from all the things you talked about, that's just mind control. Yeah. Yeah. And And if there's a news story that breaks, it's the same narrative on all five channels, CNN, CBS, NBC, ABC, MSNBC, all the same exact language being used. There's nothing to compare one to the other or right. whatever. And so deep inside of me, I despise somebody trying to manipulate me. I don't know why I'm wired that way, but I've been that way since, you know, I was 3 years old.
Right.
So I was a hard child to raise. And that's why I was interested, you know.
Well, and you also grew up in a time where people started not thinking, because I think people have always thought with independent thought and freedom, but there was like a more of a freeing of communicating and using words to take a position on something. When you saw something that was injustice against others, you know, there was more power in numbers of speaking out against things that you saw as evil, whether it was the Vietnam War or whether it was position on Cold War, pointing nuclear weapons at each other and all these different things. It was always an action to get somebody else to bend to their knee. And it's usually done with power, fear, or manipulation. Going back to, you know, Nazi Germany, the media was heavily used as a manipulation tool to get people to kind of buy into a certain way of thinking. They may not have completely agreed with it or anything, but it was like, well, this seems like the best way to go, I guess, right? This is what we're being told. And so you can manipulate the masses if you control the media, if you control the propaganda.
And you add the component of fear.
Right. And so what I see as far as in my lifetime now growing up is not just that marriage between media and government, but now you add in big tech.
Yeah.
Right. And big tech is basically in all of our pockets. Mm-hmm. It's in our homes. It's in our workplaces. And now it's added this surveillance layer, whether people will say, well, it's just used for marketing or not. It is a surveillance layer. That's a new piece of our lives that hasn't been a part of your entire life, but has been for most of your adult life now, or, mm-hmm. you know, a large portion of it, and almost for the entirety of mine, where you cannot even function in this day and age without an email address, a phone number, a way to see every text message for a two-factor authentication, possibly have some sort of video chat capabilities and things, whether you're, you know, for your job and other things, and that might not just be for your job. It may be the only way that you could have your child see a doctor through a Teladoc app on a mm-hmm. phone. Like, you're kind of like, you can't just say, I'm going to opt out. I'm not going to have an internet connection at my house. I mean, you can, but it's going to be a challenging time, you know, if you try to opt out of big tech. It's definitely going to inconvenience your day-to-day choices, routines, and the way to integrate, whether it's paying bills or any of that kind of stuff. Most of it's all done online now. Mm-hmm. And so I kind of see this, that is like another separator. If you're looking at things just kind of like chronologically, like linear from, you know, the events that, you know, you've seen, that you've witnessed, and the way that the news has transitioned and people's mentality. And now you add in the big tech layer. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of, you know, that's what we talk a lot about on this podcast, is how we can maybe not become invisible, but how we can at least reduce our surveillance scope.
Yeah. And you first got me interested in looking outside of the norm for security. Mm-hmm. Because, like probably every American who's online, I fell prey to ordering something online that I couldn't unsubscribe.
Right.
And it was access my bank account, you know, or my credit card.
Right.
My credit card. And even when I changed my credit card, they were still able to charge me monthly. I think it was like $60 or something like that.
Yeah.
So you helped me to learn how to use privacy.com.
Right.
And compartmentalize my purchases so that if I was buying something online, and this has proven to be so helpful and save me so much headache from companies who are hackers or whoever mm-hmm. who charge my credit card because I used it online for something to purchase right. something. Right. So you showed me how to get on privacy.com and to get a new credit card and use it for this one purchase and set the limit and say one-time use and then go back after that purchase and pause it so nobody can access it.
Right.
And it's saved me so much. And I did get out of that other subscription.
Right.
And hopefully because I do practice these things where when I purchase, I go to privacy.com. You help me set up a password manager. Mm-hmm. I use Bitwarden. It's awesome. You know, I probably have 100 passwords in there, so I can have more secure passwords and not have to remember them. I'm sure there's other apps and stuff, but one is just encrypted. It's just like super helpful. And it gives me a sense of security. And that gives me a sense of more calm and peace, you know, inside. And then so implementing those things. And then like I use Gmail for a number of years and I had to abandon my Gmail account because it's so full of junk and I could spend days going through and unsubscribing.
We've all been there. And you end up getting resubscribed somehow and you don't even know how.
Right. And it's just, I can't manage it. Or if I could manage it, there would be no time left over in my life to do anything enjoyable. So I abandoned Gmail. I mean, I still keep the Gmail.
Sure, as you want to. And I always recommend to everybody, even if you find yourself moving to another email service, whether it's Proton or Tutanota or self-hosting or something of that nature, you don't want to delete old email accounts, especially ones that you've had for years or decades. And if you, most people have a Gmail account or a Yahoo, and just because it's not something you use on the daily, you don't want to delete it.
Right.
Because you don't want someone else to be able to register that email account and assume your identity somehow.
And somehow, after using it for a decade or more, you know, there are some things that are tied to it that I never thought about.
Right.
And so if I need my password updated or whatever, I've got to be able to get to that Gmail account.
Correct.
To get that one thing.
Correct.
So I will probably never totally delete my Gmail. I just don't use it. And I use Proton Mail. And I love that. And I'm able to manage it without it taking up days of my time to go in and delete and, you know, see what was in there that was important. I look at it daily. I can see I have folders for where I want to keep some stuff. Mm-hmm. I delete the rest and, you know, I'm good. And I don't give out my Proton Mail unless I absolutely have to.
Right.
My Proton Mail address. So that's where you showed me how to set up a pseudo mail.
Right.
So I have the first pseudo mail I set up. I used to, I'm from I was raised in the 60s and 70s, born in the 50s. And there were some movie stars that women, you know, that were like, oh, the most beautiful woman.
Right.
So the first one I set up in her name. And then I thought, well, this one might not go well for using it as a pseudo because people might think, what?
Right.
Why is she using this? So I set up a second one.
Nice.
It's a silly name, but
And
I can access that so easily on my phone. So that if I use that email, I can get a confirmation to that email right there on my phone. No problem. And it works beautifully. And I never look at the account to see what else has been sent because it's going to be junk.
It's going to be junk. You don't care.
There's nothing important. Anything important like medically or work-related, goes through Proton. So anyway.
No, that's
how you got me hooked.
Right.
Was because that was the first reason was people were stealing my credit cards and I was having to get my Citibank card replaced 3 or 4 times a year.
I remember that.
And then you have to go back to all those places you have automatic payments on it.
And it's update just, it.
It's just hackers are always going to be there. They're always going to be stealing that stuff.
Yep.
But you've taught me how to secure it down better.
Right.
It's
harder to get to. You just become a more viable, you know, opponent. They want easy targets, soft targets. When I say they, I mean hackers, people who are just trying to use information they've either purchased or found online for malicious intent. And when you can lock yourself down, you're never really going to be able to make yourself 100% secure. It just doesn't exist. The only way that does is if you just don't go online and you don't live at all. You live in a cabin and you're off grid. That's not most of our lives. But you can make it much more difficult to gain access to your information or your financial, credit cards and things of that nature. It's easier. I won't say it's easier, but there are tools that make it easier to do that now. And it has gotten easier. I've been kind of your IT person for the last 20 years and supporting, helping you with like your, machines, your computers at home. You're on Windows for a long time. I kind of got you to try Linux, but Linux also was not so great back then, but you gave it a go. And then somewhere, I think in the mid-2000s, late-2000s, switched you to Macs, mm-hmm. which I still use today. You still use today. They're great for computers. We do love Linux, but it's just ease of use. I think that it's a lot easier to kind of like lock things down with a Mac than it is like with Windows, and also just more protection from viruses and malware. They do exist for it, but they're just not as wild and rampant. So it was natural that you would use an iPhone because you kind of became, an Apple user and you were...
And an Apple Watch.
And an Apple Watch person and all that kind of thing.
An iPad.
And that's kind of common. When you purchase, especially a computer, a Mac computer, not everyone who has an iPhone uses Macs, but typically people who have Macs will use an iPhone because mm-hmm. they work so well with each other.
Right.
And so I'd say for probably the last 10 or so years... you've been using an iPhone, right?
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Up until this year.
Right. So
yeah. I think I switched in July.
Correct. Mm-hmm. Correct. So you decided that you wanted off the Apple wagon, or at least a beginning of the journey, right? You're not trying to dump everything overnight or whatever. Right. Just like you didn't get to where you are overnight with using password managers, using Proton Mail, and all the other tools like pseudo tools and things of that nature, mm-hmm. Privacy.com and things like that. Mm-hmm. You kind of did it over time, and as you saw the value in investing into learning how to use some of these tools, you decided to make the plunge into, all right, well, how can I get rid of my iPhone next?
Right. And I thought about it for months.
Right.
And then I decided, all right, my birthday was coming up in a few months mm-hmm. and that we'd go ahead and we'd buy me a de-Google phone
mm-hmm.
or, it's a Pixel phone.
A Pixel phone that we de-Googled. Yeah.
Right. Ourselves. And that I'd go ahead and jump in.
So let's talk about that. Let's talk about that. Thinking about it for 2 months, because there's a lot of people who listen to this podcast and they're live in the chat. So, they come in and I understand. It's like, well, I really rely on my iPhone and I understand. And there's no shame in using an iPhone or a stock Android phone. The last thing I ever want to do is make someone give anyone any kind of guilt or anxiety for not being de-Googled on their mobile device. I understand. I still use an iPhone every day. It's part of my job. I have to have certain apps and certain integrations. But I also have my Pixel in my pocket, my personal device, which is running Graphene OS. So I get it. So just tell me your fear and your uncomfortability with that process before saying like, okay, I'm going to try this.
Well, everything we do is tied to our phones. Everything. I mean, it's like a appendage,
right,
of who we are. And so I had used iPhone and Mac, and then I had gotten an Apple Watch like a couple years ago. And I still work, and our insurance company has a activity app mm-hmm. that you can earn points every day by reaching certain goals. And my company, once you reach a certain level on those goals, you don't have to pay your premium for your insurance for the rest of the year.
That is a huge incentive.
Yes.
To meet those those fitness goals.
Right. So would this new, you know, de-googled phone running Graphing OS,
right,
would those apps work on that? That is money to me. It's right. Money. I mean, it's part of my paycheck,
right,
to reach those goals, have it connected.
You're using an iPhone, you have your Apple Watch, you have the apps on your phone to track this stuff so that they can send the fitness goal information to the data back to the healthcare provider, and based on the outcome of those metrics, determines whether or not you get comped, essentially, mm-hmm, for your healthcare plan's installment plan, what you would normally pay.
Right.
Right.
And just for the first time, I received an email from our financial coordinator. Oh, you're going to get $600 rebate back for hitting your goal 7 months early, right?
That's incredible.
So, I mean, we're talking money.
Yeah.
The thing is that when I was using my Apple Watch, my Apple Watch and my iPhone, and communicating to that insurance health app, there were glitches. It wouldn't count all the points for me. There was problems. And every year we have this big meeting with the insurance people and talk about the goals,
right,
and everything. And we would bring this up. Those of us who had an iPhone had issues.
Mm.
Even if we used like a Fitbit, but it was going through our iPhone.
Right.
And they said, well, unfortunately, our platform doesn't work well with
which is iPhone. Mind-blowing, because in the United States, I think that Apple is probably a half or larger market share for mobile phones and mobile devices.
Right.
So that is kind of mind-blowing that it was kind of not work so great with Apple.
And that's the only explanation. It happened over several years.
Kind of makes me wonder if it wasn't intentional a little bit, you know, so they wouldn't maybe have to, they could say, well, there's glitches with Apple and maybe not everyone hits their goals and so they don't have to comp.
Could
you know,
be. Or maybe they had a deal with Android or something.
Maybe.
Right?
Right.
I mean, who knows what goes on in back rooms?
Sure.
So I made the decision to switch over to a Garmin watch.
Right.
And then use the Garmin app on my phone to talk to my...
to your healthcare provider. Still on your iPhone, though, at this point.
Still on my iPhone. And the Garmin watch was much better at recording all of my activities and getting me the points.
Gotcha.
And it happened quicker. You know, they'd show up quicker in my account.
Right.
So there was something about the Apple Watch and the iPhone in that. So when we're talking about me transitioning to a new phone, a non-iPhone, mm-hmm, that was in the back of my mind. Like, well, maybe some things might actually work better.
Right.
And that, I'm like, yeah, I'm willing. And plus, you had been talking on your podcast through these this last year and a half, and like I could hear you saying that there were things that were working better.
Right.
And then the one big deal that I had about switching to was, what about my 30,000 photos in the iCloud? You know, like, how am I going to get those? And you had just found some possibilities that we could probably get those photos.
Right.
Well, I have a Mac, so I could give up my iPhone and still access my photos.
Sure, sure, yeah.
So why hang on to the iPhone?
Right.
And then we went camping last May, and we're sitting around the campfire, and we can get cell service at this campfire. And there's a guy there, and he's part of our crew. Mm-hmm. And he had brought this miniature leaf blower to clean up his camp area site.
Right.
And we're all making fun of him and everything. And
which has actually turned out to be a brilliant idea, to carry a small little leaf blower when you go camping, because you can blow all the dust and leaves and stuff off your camping gear.
It's brilliant.
It was.
But what showed up on those of us who had iPhones and Siri, what showed up on our phones immediately?
Leaf blower ads.
Leaf blower
ads. Right. Right.
Okay. Coincidence? All right. So then later we were talking about a neighbor of yours, and your wife was telling me, my daughter-in-law, she's telling me about this really unique ice machine that your neighbor showed you when they had you over for dinner, and they offered to give it to you.
Right.
And that damn ice machine showed up on the phones.
Right.
As an ad. And that, I'm like, hell no. I am so tired of the manipulation, not only in the algorithms, Facebook and all that stuff, but my own phone is right. using me as a product. I'm not using it as a product. It's right. using me as a product. And going back to that innate thing in me that doesn't like to be manipulated, used mm-hmm. in any way, you know, I'm just like, I'm ready to pull the plug. Let's do this. So then it was just 3 or 4 months later. And
it's interesting you say that, because I think for a lot of people who are looking out for their best interest when it comes to privacy and security, have some kind of moment where they just get fed up. And they may not be able to do everything as fast as they want to, but they're now committed to say, I'm going to make changes. I'm going to slowly find alternatives to provide the same products and solutions that I have come to rely on, but I don't want to rely on one sole provider for these any longer, whether it's a Google platform or an Apple platform. And that is, I think, the hardest part, is getting to that point but not knowing what to do about it. You know, like, you get so frustrated with that in that moment, like, I've had it. I'm done with this. I'm tired of these targeted ads. I'm tired of, rather than my device be a teammate for me, it's a spy. Mm-hmm. And all it's doing is it's reporting back to the mothership everything that I'm doing. I will post a link to this article that just came out on December 28th. It's an article that James, I think his last name is Cridlin. It's his personal blog. I think it's like a Substack type of thing. He posted a pretty detailed article about him requesting all of his data from Apple. And I won't go through the whole thing. I won't go through all of it. But one of the things I wanted to show you, Mima, and kind of the audience, and I'll have a link to this in the show notes, is I'm just going to show this. I'm just going to talk about this one particular piece, which is the podcast's play state. And it says, this is within Apple Media Services under the store's activity information. And he says, it's fascinating since it lists podcasts that have been played on his device. He says, here's what Apple says it is. And he has a screenshot of an Excel, basically an Excel document. And it says, I don't use podcasts normally. I don't use the Apple Podcast app normally to listen to podcasts. So there's not much here. He goes, this appears to be downloads that have never been played. And he says, quotes, the ones in the yes column have been played, and the ones that I have played, and for how long? Says, I'd love to see this kind of data for people who are using Apple Podcasts as their daily podcast app. And when I blow this up, I don't know if you can see this on the screen, Mima, but basically it shows the feed. So it shows the podcast that is subscribed, and it shows whether it was manually set, is it new, the last time it played, any playback position, the play count, and has it been played, yes or no, right? So this is just an example of collected information. So this is from his podcast app, the Apple Podcast app, from his iPhone. And tracking, it's like, look, we understand that some technology needs to track to make sure it's successfully connected, that it's successfully subscribed or unsubscribed, downloaded a podcast. But the fact that it keeps this level of granular information and it's stored indefinitely forever, this is an interesting piece of, you know, information that a lot of news, media, governments perhaps would love to get their hands on, because if you can see what podcasts people listen to at what frequency, what's the nature of the content of them, you could start bucketing individuals into certain cohorts or interest pools that could be looked at as problematic down the road. Speaking out, you know, civil dissidents, you know, and non-compliance, right? If you're listening to podcasts that may be considered or deemed radical or even terrorist in some situations, even though that's not how we would classify it, you know, as sane, rational individuals who are just looking for a plethora of information. But and if you're not getting your information from the chosen source, then you might be classified or looked at or deemed as like some sort of fringe.
A threat.
So this is just an example right now of the surveillance, the reporting, the manipulation. So these ads that you're talking about, well, yeah, I'm sure, I'm pretty convinced that the devices are listening to us, that they are actually harvesting keywords for marketing purposes, maybe for other purposes as well. But in order to target that ad back to you, they have to know a lot about you, and they also have to have access to you through your device. So there's no such thing as having an Apple phone, not really. I'm sure there are ways, but not through the traditional means where you can have an Apple phone where they don't explicitly know your identity. Because when you sign up, they force you right into the Apple iCloud system, and in order to download apps, especially if you have any cost to it, you have to put in your name along with your financial information, because you would think, well, I have to put in my real name because it matches what's on my credit card, so on and so forth, right? So Apple and Google both do the same thing when you set up a Google or an Android device, whether it's a Samsung or Pixel or any kind of Android phone. You log into the phone using your Gmail address. Right. And that Gmail address is connected to the Play Store, which is connected to your financial information. It's connected to your email, which they have all the access to. And the same on Apple side, right? So they all have access. What I'm saying is they know definitively who you are on the planet as being that actual person. And now all data that's collected from that device through all these apps, like this podcast app is a great example, through what apps you download, where you go on the internet, so on and so forth. It's all 100% tied to a verifiable identity, which is you, because it's very unlikely that you're sharing your phone with five other individuals.
Right.
Right. I mean, right. It's just not.
Yeah. So it's building a more and more precise profile of my usage.
Correct.
They're wrong on who I am.
Correct.
But they can categorize me according to their algorithm or their set of standards or categories or whatever. And just because I hate to be manipulated, I'm sure I would be considered a threat. You know? Seriously.
Yeah. Right. I mean, she's part of the resistance.
I'm part of the resistance. And I'm not.
Right.
Well, just personally.
Sure.
I'm resistant to to you breaking into my private places. Mm-hmm. I don't want you in my home. Mm-hmm. Okay, so like we got this. So we have a 100-acre ranch, mm-hmm. but it sits on a HOA.
Right.
And that's just collectively the couple hundred people that live out there. It pays for our roads to stay graded up.
Right.
Rated, you know.
Yeah, it takes care of just some of the infrastructure that's needed for everything to run smoothly out there.
So get the newsletter, you know, the annual newsletter. And in a red box, it says, you know, according to this ordinance for the HOA, mm-hmm. all animals, including your pets, have to be fenced.
Yeah.
Well, we have 100 acres and we have
and this
dogs.
Is on a 45,000 acre ranch, right? And you have about 175 to 200 people out there. The smallest piece of land that you can legally own and put a home on is, what, 35, 40 acres.
Yeah.
So we're not talking about a suburban neighborhood.
Right.
We're talking about extremely rural, raw land space.
Right. And so they want to tell me that my dogs need to be fenced.
Right.
My dogs are there to keep their security. Their security for us at night.
Let's also throw out there that there is also another rancher out there who has free range cows.
Right. And the cows come right on our property.
Right on everyone's property. And that's kind of, you know, it's a benefit. You get some tax benefit by allowing that to allow them grazing on your property. But you also don't want the cows coming up to your house. They'll ruin your stuff. They'll ruin all sorts of stuff. They mainly lean on it.
Right.
They like to scratch your back and lean on stuff.
And they break stuff.
And they break stuff. So to have some dogs to keep the cows at least at bay where they're still on your, they're fine to be on the property on the lower area, but like you don't want them coming up to the house. You can't have a fence and also manage that situation unless you were to fence in your entire property, and what you're talking about potentially $20,000 to $30,000 in fencing and labor and everything, depending upon the size of your parcels.
Right.
And
if you fenced all that, then
you also lose the tax benefit because now the cows can't come on your property.
But the point of that was that, so our dogs do not leave our property unless I take them hiking with me. And I like to hike like 3 or 4 miles, you know, out on this terrain. So this is saying that my dogs have to be fenced. And this ordinance has been there probably since we first built our house out there.
Right.
But they put it in a red box. They're like trying to make a point. Well, I know some people's dogs are a nuisance and they go to other people's property and, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
So you're saying my dogs have to pay the price for those dogs for being, untrained or whatever. Anyway, so the solution to this is don't come to my fucking property.
Right.
You are not welcome.
Right.
Whoever thinks this ordinance important,
you
know, and that everybody should follow, you're not welcome on my property. And you know us, we welcome everybody.
Sure.
But you're not welcome if you think that this ordinance should apply to my dogs.
Right.
You know, the dogs are there. We got those dogs to serve a purpose at protecting our stuff from the cows. And we have animals.
Well, I was going to say, they're not just there to protect stuff from cows. Right. They're there to protect the chickens, the alpaca, the goats and ducks and things from predators like coyotes, which are on the property.
They're den. Yeah. So it all makes sense, mm-hmm. right? It makes sense.
Big horned owls, yes. all sorts of stuff.
And yet somebody wants to jump on this, like, you're a threat if you don't fence your dogs. And we have 113 acres. It's like, just stay off my property.
Yeah, and everything's going to be fine.
Everything's going to be fine because my dogs will stay off your property.
Right.
So what's the issue? That's what it feels like to me.
Mm-hmm.
When you're talking about, oh, you're a threat.
Right.
So if I can categorize you as a threat, mm-hmm. then I can either shame you or try to apply laws to you or whatever that you know, to keep you from fully exercising your freedom on your land or your space or within your car or whatever. So, you know, that's about tracking.
Right.
And then I'm just slowing down the amount of information they can get on me.
Right.
You know, who I talk to and where I go and all of that stuff. It's none of their fucking business.
Right.
And I'm not a crazy person.
No.
I mean, I'm not a, no. you know, I'm not even a redneck.
No, no, yeah, yeah.
I cherish my privacy and my freedom. And the freedom's getting chipped away at in my lifetime. Like, I can't believe it.
Right.
You know, but at least I can hang on and fight the fight for my own privacy.
Right. Right.
Because you have no business on my property. You have no business in my house unless I welcome you there.
Right. And that's the way that I think a lot of people felt before that big tech layer I was talking about got layered into our lives. So, you know, when we grew up, we had a nice home. We, you know, lived in a nice neighborhood, and we locked the doors at night and everything. But it was like people respected boundaries, and it was welcoming to have people over because the social dynamics were self-respecting. It was respecting of people's boundaries and privilege, you know, and kind of their privacy. And so people were very sheltered about things, about their finances. They were, you know, they would kind of hold that. I mean, obviously close friends might share things, but I mean, it wasn't like this, you weren't sharing stuff freely with the world is what I'm saying. You would share it with specific individuals that you trusted. Like your lawyer or a close friend or family member, but it wasn't common knowledge. And I mean, there was always gossip and stuff, sure, in neighborhoods and communities and stuff, but all of your actual like browsing habits, your medical history, your financial information, all this stuff was for private use only. And I feel like with, especially having gone through this couple years of the pandemic situation, it's really broke down the expectations of what's private use only and what should be available for everyone to utilize about you, whether it's for marketing or other purposes. And I'm like, it's like it just slipped away so quickly with this extra layer in, right? Where I get to choose if I want to watch the news or not. I get to choose what kind of political beliefs I want to subscribe to. But in this day and age, I feel like people don't really get to choose how they're surveilled digitally, which is much more invasive than anyone just coming to your door asking if you'd like to take a survey and they could just check down some boxes that you could opt in or out of. Now it's like, no, it's just being sold on the back end.
Right.
You don't get a say.
And what's really become prevalent in my experience, and I have a chronic illness that has required therapy for 25 years. Mm-hmm. And so I have to have good insurance. I have to have good doctors and specialists. And you know, it works for me because I went from being in a wheelchair to being able to hike 3 or 4 miles or more, you know,
yeah,
a big difference of life, quality of life.
Yeah.
But what I've found, and then your sister has a chronic illness, mm-hmm, that is terminal and is, you know, takes a lot of attention, a lot of special doctors. And so as her caregiver, I'm navigating her stuff and my stuff. Right. Your dad, who goes to the doctor once a year, never has any issues.
Right.
You know, this isn't a deal about him. But so we have to register now in all these different portals,
right,
for each hospital and doctor system,
right,
like
right.
Centura, the special system, your sister.
Because if you get any lab work or anything done to get the results or to get recommendations to see the specialist, it's all done through the portal.
Through the portal,
right,
which I use Bitwarden for right. all of the, because it's like, before, it used to be just you and your doctor.
Right.
And then it became you and your insurance. I mean, when I with my insurance, they've taken over all of my prescription drugs, you know, which right. used to be through pharmacy.
Right.
I don't even go to a pharmacy anymore.
Right.
So there's more and more places that have these records that I have to log into, and I don't like reading the fine print on everything, accepting the terms and agreement. But I did read through one, and they said they had the permission to share my medical information. And it was just after the pandemic, with who they thought was best to share it with.
Sure. You know,
it's like, what happened to HIPAA? What happened to, you know, no, absolutely no on sharing my medical information.
Right.
I'm just finding more and more places that you have to create an account, mm-hmm, and you know, to access.
Well, and it's not even so much that who they share it with, but a lot of these medical companies don't share the same standards in privacy, not necessarily privacy, but in the security of data protection.
Right.
And I mean, it seems like every week on Twitter, I'm seeing data breaches of medical record companies. You have zero input control. And it's not just the initial medical provider who runs the portal, but who they're sharing it with, how it's transferred, how it's stored, what's the retention on that. You have zero insight into any of that. Right. It used to be they were on a hard copy. I'm not saying that everything should go back to hard copy, but uh-huh. You used to go to your doctor and the people that would work the front desk could manage the medical records, could just pull your file right there. And if they needed to send it somewhere, they would fax it somewhere, which right. I know people would be like, well, fax is insecure. Well, you're right. But the point is that you knew exactly from where it was and where it was going. Like it was, yeah. And I know that's kind of antiquated in today's terms, but it should still be that. It should still, like if a doctor is sending it to a specialist that's recommending you for another, you know, scan of some kind or whatever, right. It shouldn't be, you know, picked up along the way and sold or, you know, it's just.
But you know, prescriptions are still done by fax.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
All prescriptions are still done by fax.
Yes.
So when you need a renewal or something, you contact your doctor and say, my health pharmacy.
Right. Or can you, I'm out of town. Can you send it to this one? You give them the location and then they fax it to them.
They do. They right. still, I mean, I just ordered something for your sister, you know, last week.
Right.
And it's still all through fax. So there's some kind of security with fax because with medication and the medication issues we have around the world with fentanyl and all
yeah,
that stuff.
Yeah.
And, you know, pain medication, you know, they still use fax. So it may be antiquated. Yeah. It may be not fully secure, but it's more secure than big tech
right.
platforms.
Sure, sure. Right. Sitting in it. Unless they were using Signal with each other, right?
Right.
Or Session.
Right. So anyway, that.
Yeah. No, it's kind of interesting because I think I was able to get, I think actually my first step to get you and other family members even aware of kind of day-to-day use and incorporating privacy into day-to-day use was using Signal, which you used on your iPhone, and now you still use today on your Google, your Pixel, you know, 6 with Graphene OS.
Correct.
So that was a fairly easy, like, proposal. And now
and we had tried some other ones, too.
I sure.
Your brother, Michael, had tried got me on some different platforms.
Yeah.
We're going to use this one for the family now. We're going to use that one.
Yeah, GroupMe, I think, was
and
one.
None of them were as crystal clear as Signal.
Yeah.
Signal is so easy.
Yeah.
And we just have one of your siblings that's not on it.
Yep.
And it's a pain in the ass.
It is.
And
I'll get her to come around one day.
It's your job.
Yeah.
Get it's her you. To come around. It's all you. And so we use some different ones. I don't
right.
know, GroupMe or
GroupMe,
something.
GroupMe, I think it was one of them, yeah.
And I didn't like the feel. I mean, it didn't seem successful. And a lot of
and it wasn't in encrypted either.
And so. I was watching you convert Michael mm-hmm. to a Graphene OS or mm-hmm. what's the other one?
He's on Calyx OS, Calyx. But we're going to move him over to Graphene yeah. here in the next couple of weeks.
And I was watching like his frustrations for a couple of years, you know.
Yeah.
And it was like I was monitoring the environment of success.
Right.
And I'm like, I think it's now it's time to pull the trigger. Yeah. And it was.
Right, right.
So I like my phone.
Yeah.
I would say I would be completely frustrated if I didn't have you in my back pocket.
And right.
You know, we don't live under the same roof.
Right.
But
we're close.
We're close. And just and it could be the Pixel phone difference mm-hmm. or, you know, I haven't been on an Android since Blackberries.
Right.
So, but, you know, I'd say that there are a lot of nerds, techie people who I just admire y'all so much. Without all of these people in the communities, we wouldn't have made the advances to where we are today. And we all benefit.
Right.
All the people who are doing stuff on open source and all of that mm-hmm. stuff, the Linux days and mm-hmm. all of that has brought us to this place
right.
and will continue to take us on to alternatives to what's being presented to us as the only options.
Right.
And just, I'm so grateful. I am so grateful for all of you. To those people who are like you, you can play a vital role in your families, in your communities, by being that person in the back pocket,
right.
you know, and helping people and say, I'll be there for you. If you run into issues that you don't understand, we'll try to figure them out together, mm-hmm. you know. And if you can just be patient, I know this is a non-patient world, but patience goes a long ways. Like, mm-hmm. I can live without my phone working for the next few hours or even 24 hours or whatever. You know, I'm getting calls, I'm getting texts, I'm okay, mm-hmm. you know. And we've run into a couple of these,
right.
but it's not the end of the world.
Right.
And you know what? I ran into them with my iPhone too.
Right.
You know,
right.
come on. I couldn't get my iPhone to serve me on this very important platform with the health insurance.
Right.
So, you know, being patient and flexible goes a long way. At this point, I don't run into very many issues. And the comfort level that I'm more private and less, I'm less being controlled by big tech out there somewhere.
Right.
Trying to control what I see, control, you know, what I buy and all of these things is it's a great enough payoff or, mm-hmm. you know, to try yeah. something new.
Some of the inconveniences you're experiencing are worth the price of entry for that peace of mind.
Right.
To knowing that you're not being manipulated because your phone is spying on you.
Right. And the thing is that from the moment I got the phone and we got it set up, I felt less dumb.
Right.
You know, because that was the biggest thing I experienced at first.
Right.
Was how dumb.
Which is
I was
interesting because
with the iPhone.
Your phone has much more configuration on it and different ways to do things. Like in my opinion, the Android in general, especially if you're running something like a degoogled ROM, is more sophisticated, far more sophisticated in its features and submenu items of what you can do and how you can configure your privacy settings than the iPhone.
Mm-hmm.
And so the iPhone, I think, was designed to make everyone feel like they could do complicated things really easily. But then when you ran into a problem, there was not an easy way to troubleshoot or there wasn't very many settings to toggle on or off.
It was like you're completely ignorant.
Right. It's like a play school phone, you know?
Yeah. You know, in the 80s, you know, I got hired by a big tech company to just do data entry.
Mm-hmm.
And they said, it was a summer job and I need to come back home to you kids because you're homeschooled.
Right.
And they said, well, we'd like you do this really well. I had really badass data entry skills.
Right.
That was just something I was quick with and I could do, you know. So they asked me if I could take it home and do it from home. I'm like, what are you talking about?
Yeah.
Yeah, this is late 80s. And they're like, we're going to give you something called a modem and you're going to plug it into the wall and whatever. So I didn't understand. I just plugged it in the wall
right.
and I did my job.
Right.
I dialed in, dial up. You know,
you didn't need to understand as long as it worked.
Right.
You know?
And prior to that, the reason why I was so fast at data entry is because I had data entry jobs back in the early 80s where we were just plugging data in to dumb terminals.
Right.
That's what they were called, dumb right. terminals. And they fed to the mainframe. That's what the iPhone felt like to me. Like my phone was a dumb terminal.
Right.
And that, you know, I didn't know what was going on behind it. So if I couldn't do something, I had no clue why.
You're just providing an input and it's supposed to do something on the back end and provide the output back to you. And when it didn't do that, where did the problem start, or where's the issue?
Yeah.
And we've had a couple problems here and there that we've addressed, mainly because you have a little bit more of an advanced setup, because I have set up a Nextcloud server for us to use. So your contacts and your stuff is syncing back there, mm-hmm. which, you know, every once in a while we have a little hiccup. I had to do some updates on the server and everything was hunky-dory. So all of us were out of pocket for like, you know, a couple of days on accessing some information. Granted, we have backups, take snapshots every 3 days. The worst case scenario is we'd be out for 72 hours of some data. But that's part of the trade-off, is because we run it, right? We host it, we run it, it's ours. So our phones communicate back to our server. Sometimes things are going to go wrong. Mm-hmm. Sometimes things will fail. And, you know, with larger big tech companies, those failures happen less often. And you don't have to worry about it. But the trade-off is they have access to all your information. They have access to all your, and they can also be the gatekeeper of you getting back to your data. And if something fails, you're just kind of stuck. And if you've ever tried to work with customer support with Google or Apple or Facebook or any of these things, I'd rather paint someone's house.
Yeah.
And I hate painting houses.
So the I ran into this problem with my iPhone too, but using messaging apps, part of the issue is that I'm not on cell service 90% of the time, maybe 95%.
Right.
Of the time. I'm off of Wi-Fi.
Right.
Because where our house is situated, there's no cell service.
Right.
You have to go up on the hill to get that.
Right.
And so when people send me stuff through the regular...
Through text, just a regular SMS text message, right?
Yeah. It doesn't always come through right away.
Like media files, right? Like videos or photos that they're sending you.
Yeah.
Right.
Or even sometimes if somebody else has in a group text, like my brothers do this, they'll send like some link.
Right.
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 Political link, you know.
Right.
I don't really care if I read it or not, you know. Yeah. I mean, like, come on, can't we just talk? And they, it won't download.
Oh, yeah.
Right? And then anybody who comments or says anything in just a regular text, none of those would download either. But once I get up to cell service, they do.
Right.
And that, I think that's a Wi-Fi issue, cell, you know, right. connection.
Wi-Fi calling kind of mode.
Right. Yeah. Versus being on...
On the actual, like, LTE connection. Yeah, 5G or... Yeah.
Well, I'm just saying that can happen with iPhone as well as... But that's something I've accepted.
Right.
When I get a text through that instead of Signal, I just say, well, I'll read it when it comes through or when I see it,
whatever. Yeah.
It's, you know. Now, it's funny that your sister texts me through her Pixel phone every morning. She texts everybody. Mm-hmm. And all of her gifts come through and her,
right.
You know, all of it. It never not downloads with her. I think that the folks that are sending me something through SMS is sending it through iPhones.
Right, because what happens is when an iPhone sends out media, if it's sending it to another iPhone, it just goes through iMessage servers. So they're going only through Apple servers, and it can send the rich media a lot easier. When an iPhone user is sending something to someone who's on Android, regardless of what model they're on, whether it's GrapheneOS or stock on Android or whatever, and they're working on this. I say they, mm-hmm. meaning Google. They're trying to implement new protocols. I think RCS or something like that. But it's really a limitation of the cell network providers in that there's only so much memory that's allocated to fit that message. Mm-hmm. So sometimes, especially with threaded conversations where multiple people are involved and they're replying and adding images, that it congests it to the point where it just kind of holds it and it can't send it. Because what it also does is, if you ever got a photo from, if you have an, or if you're an Android user and you get a photo from an iPhone user, it's like very small, like mm-hmm. it's sized down to the point where it's almost blurry. You can't really see it that well. And that happens because there's a fixed limit size on how much data can be transferred in that message. So I think that is just maybe also partly by design. Mm-hmm. And the reason why I say that is because Apple has gone out of their way to make it very difficult to be and text message conversations with non-iPhone users. Mm-hmm. That's where the whole blue green bubble thing came from, because they don't have those limitations of file size and all that, because it's all going through Apple servers. Mm-hmm. It's on iMessage. Mm-hmm. So in order to keep it's so that's what I think prohibits a lot of, or keeps, I've even seen the conversations in our own chat. Well, my friends and family are on iPhone and it just makes life easier. I understand. I get it. I converse with a lot of people professionally who are all on iOS devices. And a lot of times it's used as a communication channel. They don't look at it as texting. iPhone users don't look at iMessage as texting. They look at it as communicating, as they look at it as a messaging app, not texting. So, because they don't have any problems, especially if they're all communicating with other iPhone users. And this is a big sticking point for people. Mm-hmm. And I understand it. I get it. Mm-hmm. But it is something you have to give up if you're going to move to an Android-based platform. This is where things like Signal bridge the gap really well.
Really well. There is absolute videos.
Videos, whatever. Photos, responding, laughing on people's things, replying to someone's part of the conversation from 8 post messages ago. You can reply back to that. So context maintains continuity throughout the conversation. And on top of that, it's end-to-end encrypted. So the conversation stays between the people. You can set the content to be ephemeral. You can set disappearing messages to a day, an hour, a week, 2 weeks. So that way, hey, after 2 weeks, everything that we've talked about, it just goes into the, it just disappears. It deletes itself. That might be a safe thing, especially if you're giving each other, talking about personal things in those conversations. At least, you know, hey, every 2 weeks it's purging out that conversation. Mm-hmm. And who really needs to go back more than 2 weeks, mm-hmm. especially in a group conversation, right? Mm-hmm. And you can change it depending upon your needs. So for me, I always think that, or I say that, try to move your family to Signal. If you have a mix of iPhone users and Android, and there's no way they're going to go to GrapheneOS and DGoogle, but maybe they could go ahead. A lot of people are already using WhatsApp or Facebook Messenger. Just use Signal.
Right.
Because then everyone gets to have that same rich experience without having any of these limitations and so on and so forth.
Yeah.
And you get that end-to-end encrypted, you know, communication, which is nice to keep things nice and tidy and private.
Yeah. And I was just... Lastly, I just want to say that using my favorite apps has not been a problem.
On your Pixel with GrapheneOS?
Yes.
Right?
Like, I have the Sandbox.
Right, right.
And my Google Play Store is inside the Sandbox. I love that imagery.
Right.
Because, you know, you can't see anything in the sand.
Right.
And... so I can use all of my favorite apps. I think there's just one that wasn't.
I think it was Hulu.
Hulu? Right?
Yeah.
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 And I don't use Hulu anyway because Hulu has commercials. Your dad watches it for football.
Sure.
I'm like, we're so... And by the way, he doesn't have a de-Googled phone.
No.
Right. And he has the exact same issues with the texting.
He's running iPhone. Stock Android on a Pixel 6. Correct.
Right. So, you know, it's just being off an iPhone. But I like what, you know, like they see it as communicating or whatever, messaging with each other. I didn't realize how that's tracked as well.
Yes.
You know, yeah. So getting your whole family and friends, community onto Signal is like, hey, let's just go one step of privacy.
Yeah.
You know, one step. And we're going to have just as great of experience. And everybody can do it, whether no matter what phone they have. Mm-hmm. Let's just all get on the same. You
right,
know.
Right. And it's a hard sell to some people until they get on and you start using it. And then it just becomes part of your daily life, yeah. Just like any other app. And I love how people are like, I don't want another app. Whatever. You have over 100 apps on your phone. You can run an app. Especially if it's something that is as critical as communication with other people. Mm-hmm. I can get that if you're trying to get someone to download some gambling app or something, they'd be like, I'm not downloading that. But we're talking about an end-to-end encrypted communication app. It's cross-platform, and it makes everyone's life, it enhances everyone's life. And so I kind of gotten to that point where it's like, talk to me on Signal or Session. Otherwise, you're not going to talk to me. Mm-hmm. If you're going to try to text me on SMS, I'm probably not going to reply. Mm-hmm. And that's just important.
Yeah.
You know, otherwise, call me. But texting, it's, you know, what a boomer thing to do. Get on Signal, get on Session. I got to throw the boomer joke out there, sure. Right? So, you know, I think that I think so far watching you through this experience this past year make that transition, I was, as your IT person, your tech person, I was a little like unsure of like, how much extra IT stuff is this going to layer on top of me, which I'm happy to do. But I was like, oh my gosh, I hope this does. I hope she don't have a lot of problems. And honestly, you've had a few issues here and there. Nothing that's been not something we couldn't resolve within an afternoon in an hour, a couple hours or whatever. One of them was just a backend issue. That's more my problem running the next cloud server. And you've actually seemed more delighted with your technology. Mm-hmm. You got some really cool earbuds, and your Garmin watch works really well with your phone.
Super well.
And you're just kind of like, you seem like everything is generally super groovy, you know?
Yeah. And, you know, I don't need an iPhone for my work like you.
Right, right.
And I don't, oh, by the way, just, you know, so as I was building up to this, the thing that, I can tell you the day I decided I'm doing this. I was flying back from out of state with two of my grandchildren, and one of them was 9 years old, and she had an old iPhone.
Right.
And trying to get to our next flight, you know, and I'm thinking about backpacks and stuff because one's six, one's 9 years old.
Right.
You know, like, okay, I'm super, like, okay, focused on that. She left her iPhone in the seat. And we were already, like, getting on the next plane when we figured it out. So I filed a report, and it didn't come through. But I told her, Mima's getting a new phone. If we can't get yours back, you can have this one. And so she has that one.
Yeah.
And as I looked at my Apple Watch, her sister had an iPhone, her 14-year-old sister.
Right.
And I thought, well, you know, it's not to give her something like an iPhone and not send something to the other one. So I sent her my Apple Watch.
So they go on to live their full life.
Yeah.
Now they're just not tied to your identity.
They're not. And I'm fine with that.
Right.
I know I don't want an Apple phone again.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, that's just me. I mean, iPhone.
Yeah.
I still have my Mac computer, and I don't use it much. I use my work. Well,
You use it as a computer when you need a computer. I mean, it's because you do work on a work computer most of the day. So generally, you're not trying to get on the computer unless you want to.
And I use a Brave browser to try to slow down the tracking when I'm on it. But I use Brave for my work too.
Right. Right.
To just try to, you know, or any kind of browser that's
Just not use, don't use Google Chrome. You know, Brave is great. Firefox is great. There's some other ones that are really good. Honestly, really using anything that just helps create barriers between you and the spying is going to benefit you. Like I said, depending upon your threat model and what you're trying to achieve, you may need to go more hardcore or less hardcore. And we have been going pretty hard in the paint on this podcast for like the last several episodes with Josh, Side of Burritos, big, great, great YouTuber doing awesome content on GrapheneOS, like how-to videos and things of that nature. But it does get pretty deep sometimes and technical. And so sometimes, you know, just putting up small barriers in front of you and using things like a password manager, privacy.com, if you're in the United States, for your shielding your privacy, your transactions. You know, I understand. I don't expect everyone on that listens to be jumping right into de-Googled phones and all that, but use Signal. Use a password manager. Use a privacy-respecting browser on your phone. Find ways to maybe limit, you know, how much use MySudo or simple login to alias your login accounts, so you're not using your real email address everywhere. These are some really basic, simple things that you can do right away. Yes, some of them cost money. They're not that much money, but how much is your privacy worth to you? Is it worth $100 a year?
Yeah.
You could pay for all of those for $100 a year.
Right.
You could have a two MySudo account, a Bitwarden account. Privacy.com doesn't charge you, you know.
Right.
You know, what is it worth? everyone has to answer that question for themselves. But that's one of the things, like Ente, E-N-T-E. I know some, it's an application I've been using. It does end-to-end encrypted for your photos. So if you have an iPhone, if you have an Android phone, if you have a Mac, you have Linux, it'll work on everything. It encrypts your photos and uploads and syncs them to their cloud server, but they don't have access to your images, your photos. So if you're like, oh, I want to get off my photos off of iPhoto, off iCloud, that could be a really good route, unless, you know, otherwise you got to find a way to download them somewhere else, right? So, okay, it's not free. It costs money. I'm fine. Please let it cost money. I know it costs money. I run our own servers. I pay for virtual servers and everything else and infrastructure, and sometimes you need software licensing for things. Pay for your stuff. If not, you, like you said earlier, you're the product. Your phone's using you as the product and not the other way around.
And not having a secure accounts and and purchases online. I mean, every time you register your email, you are opening another floodgate to more emails and ads, and not just one from one address. You get from marketing, get from customer service, you get them all. You get on like eight lists for one company.
Right.
And that way, if you unsubscribe to one, you know, they got you on there. And I'm in sales. I understand the whole, you know, unsubscribe thing. But if you just use sudo, and sudo is free, you only pay if you want to
have the phone number service. Correct.
I decided to go with the phone number.
Yeah.
And it's really cheap, like $10 a year or something.
Yeah, for one studio. I have like the max, which is like $9, and it's only like $8 or $10 a month.
Right, you know? Because then when you register new accounts on anything you purchase, you have to put in a phone number.
Correct.
And now you're on more sales lists for these obnoxious phone calls. How much is all of that time and weeding through all of those junk emails, spam emails and everything, what's that worth to you? Is that worth $10 a year? You know, like how much time does that put back in your pocket at the end of the year from just not having to weed through all of that and get all those stupid phone calls, you know?
Yeah. I think like Bitwarden is only like $3 a month if you pay for the year.
Yeah, it's super cheap.
What kind of time does that save you? Yeah. Especially with like registering on all those portals and everything that you're talking about. You know, you don't have to worry about keeping track of passwords. And if there's a breach, it's only good for that one account.
Right.
You can go back and change it.
Right. And even if there's a breach in those portals, if they're trying to line up emails with me, I mean, passwords with me, they're not going to get my Taffy 123.
Right. The old school one. Yeah, exactly.
You know, they're not getting those.
Right.
Anymore. I'm not.
And your high school mascot plus, you know, 121 or whatever, you know, the date you graduated.
You know, you turned me on to Darknet Diaries.
I love that podcast.
And thank you, Jack Reciter.
Yes. We're both Patreon subscribers to his channel.
Yes, yes.
So.
But that is eye-opening about, you know, that they just run this program for every login, you know, to every bank, school, institution.
Like a brute force login attack.
Adam, admin.
Right.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah.
As a username.
As a username. And know? Eventually they figure it out.
And they figure it out and they make these, you know, they make these hacks. And
And
then they apply what passwords they've hacked from you or figured out on you.
And they go run it across the most top 100 services out there and start seeing what they get logged into.
And it just makes me and whoever does this less vulnerable to so many, because they're going to keep doing their stuff. They're going to keep doing it, and it's just always going to be with us. You know, hacking's not going away.
And it's, especially with nation states and everything, and kind of tensions heightening in our current environment with what's going on in the middle with Russia and Ukraine. And I see Switzerland's kind of starting to get nervous again. They're going to start ramping up, probably building more tunnels again and putting in those bunkers. They're really good at that stuff, you know. It just seems like people. So digital warfare is the easiest to do.
Right.
And there, when I say there, I'm talking about nation state actors, probably even our own nation, are fighting against other nations in wars that we can't visually see. They're happening online. They're happening in cyberspace, so to speak. And personal information is being weaponized against nations. Mm-hmm. It happens through, you know, these heists where they're doing, you know, holding information hostage. You have to basically pay up, you know, pay in Bitcoin. There's all these different types of things that are happening. And it's only going to increase. It's not going to decrease.
Well, I mean, look.
Just like look what happened the war on drugs.
Southwest Airlines. Like, we don't know if they were hacked, but it's very possible.
It's very possible.
That it could have been ransomware and, like, and they held everything hostage.
It could be.
For, you know.
I would not be the least bit surprised if we find out a month from now that it was ransomware and they had to. And it could be. They have old systems. It's like not like it's, you know, they're updating these things annually. These things are like decades old in some cases, just like a lot of old banking applications still run on AS400s. Not as many now, but they were for a long time, up even until the mid-teens, 2013, 2014, 2015. I know because I've been involved in consulting projects that have to figure out how to solution some of those things to new, moving them off servers and moving them over to Azure, Amazon Web Services, things of that nature. So there's critical infrastructure everywhere that is open for being attacked. And you have to look at yourself as part of that, you know, because you're using a lot of these platforms. So your data is the one at stake if attacked.
I mean, I have, you know, two Southwest accounts, maybe three, maybe one for your sister, you know.
Yeah, and I have a Southwest account. Yeah.
I try not to store my credit card information there.
Inside the thing, yeah,
same. But then, like, when I go to book a flight, it's there. You know, like, I didn't authorize that.
Right.
You know? But it's there. And so where are those passwords for those accounts? They're all locked down in Bitwarden.
Right.
You know, they are harder to find, and they're all unique. They're not going to be the same. They're not going to find that anywhere but tied to one account.
Right.
So, yeah, it's just we've got to arm ourselves, protect ourselves from what we can do. Mm-hmm. We can't do it all. We can't, you know, and like you said, we can't do anything about wars that are going to happen. But the cyber wars, the things that are happening that are unseen, mm-hmm. but just as destructive, just ask any passenger on Southwest this last couple of weeks over Christmas, you know, like, it's misery. And so anytime our information gets hacked and used, it's a miserable process for us.
Right.
You know, and we can limit that by doing the things you guys talk about.
Yeah. Well, thanks for taking the time to come on. This has been fun to unpack this. There's a lot of things that you and I haven't even discussed until now about this process and this journey. I call it a journey because I don't really feel like there's a beginning and an end destination. I feel like you're always looking at different horizons and different mountains and saying, well, what's over there? What's over there? And how can I, let's go in that direction. And maybe you pivot. Maybe you come to a fork in the road and you go right instead of left. There's no one size fits all same path for all of us. We're all on a different, we're kind of heading in a similar direction where we're trying to achieve something that brings peace to our lives, but we're not all following the same path to get there.
Exactly.
And some people have limitations. Some people might be in this, you know, example might be in a wheelchair. I can't climb the mountain, so how do I go around the mountain? And that's kind of what we're here to do, is find and explore different ways to do that. Some might be more advanced, some might be simpler. But and I struggle with this a lot too, is that sometimes you find yourself not able to give something up, even though you want to. You find a way around it. Sometimes it may mean some inconvenience. Maybe it means you carry two devices instead of one. Maybe it means you have two laptops instead of one. Or maybe it means you have multiple pseudo identities to achieve something. It may be a little extra work on your part, but in the end, it brings you a little bit more peace and joy in your life, knowing that, like, well, at least I'm doing what I can to limit my exposure to surveillance or marketing or hacks and data breaches that would expose my, you know, data or my credit card information or something like that. And you're never going to be 100%, but if you can limit it, it's like if you can't keep people from breaking into your house. But if they did break into that house, maybe they only grab one item instead of 100 because the guard dog came out. Mm-hmm. Right? It's that kind of a thing.
Because he wasn't fenced.
Because he wasn't fenced. What a great way to end the podcast. I'm going to call this one Don't Fence Your Dogs. So thanks for coming on. I'll have you on again at some point. I need to get Michael on, my brother. He's been requested by listeners, as of you, as I've mentioned it. Maybe that's a lesson for me not to start mentioning you guys again too soon, because it's like I don't always know when I can get you on. But I definitely have enjoyed this, and I think that the people listening will have it's nice to get other perspectives and to find out where people are coming from, and also too, what brought you to that point. Because I think that's what connects a lot of us, regardless of political views or religious views. We all kind of get brought together by this like moment where you're like, all right, it's enough of that. How do I change this? And that's the commonality that keeps us all finding solutions together. And that's what I enjoy. So thank you all for listening. Thank you to the Patreon support that we're getting each month. If you want to contribute financially, that might be the easiest way. We also do accept crypto and other ways of individual support. There are people who I'm thankful that I haven't mentioned on this episode, but I will on the next one, that send Satoshis over the Lightning Network through Podcasting 2.0. So thank you for that. And if there's anything you want to know, hit me up in the Matrix, hit me up on Twitter, or follow on Mastodon. Go set up your Mastodon account. You just go to closednetwork.io, and you can follow the links right from the homepage. We have 4 different links, one for the search engine, one for the off-topic channel for the Matrix, one for the Matrix main channel, and now the Mastodon server. So, we also have the private search engine up there too. So feel free to use that, because I pay for all these servers, so please use them. So, Mima, thanks for coming on.
Thanks for having me.
Any parting words?
Just want to say, if you're one of those people who can help those people in your community, it would be such a service, and it, you know, sometimes we wonder what our purpose is and right. How we contribute. What's our calling? This is an area, you know, I can't do what you do.
Right.
But because you do what you do, and you do it for your family and friends, I know you help a lot of people. You know, we are all benefiting, and it just spreads.
Right.
And so, that's all. Just thank you.
Awesome.
Thank you for what you do, and for your listeners who do it for their communities. Just know that, you know, they're serving such a greater purpose.
Right on. Well, you're welcome. All right, everyone. Take care. We'll catch you in the next episode. Okay. They can never keep me down. I'm going. And if I ever fail, just know I'll go again. I never quit, because I know that every loss may lead to another win. I'm going up. I bet when I land, they're going to tell me it's lucky against